Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:40 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is October 4th. Well, I thought I'd kick off with the dollar index. It was down sharply again in here today. So now we're back at 110. That's the upper side of the underlying range. It's the first area of potential support. This has been a very consistent trend where we have a sequence of ranges, one above the last. So if this trend is going to remain consistent, the dollar will begin to strengthen tomorrow. And that would be certainly something that I think a lot of people will be paying attention to. Now, let's just then think about the bond market. So the 10-year yield did not follow through on the downside in here today. It was only down 3 basis points, still hovering here around the 3.5% level. And this is also the upper side of the underlying trading range. Now let's zoom out and look at this on a weekly basis. Well, then we can see that yes, we have a very short-term overextension. So there is ample potential for some consolidation here. And of course, these are yields. So the higher the yield goes, the more attractive it's going to become to an increasingly wide swathe of investors. Now, when we think about the broader bond markets, maybe high yield, well, high yield spreads actually made a new recovery high yesterday. So despite the fact that we've had a really impressive rebound in stocks yesterday, high yield spreads actually widened. And given the rebound that we saw in the high yield ETFs today, it would be reasonable to anticipate that high yield spread is now also going to come back down when it's updated well after the close in here today. Now, the big question for many investors is how far is this rally going to go? Now, when we think about that question, well, Australia was certainly highlighted today because the RBA raised interest rates by a quarter of a percent, but investors were anticipating that they would raise by a half of a percent. So then investors who are starting out the last quarter of the year with the acute need to salvage performance before at the end of the year closes, we'll be looking at what's happened in Australia, where the ASX 200 was up in a really quite dynamic manner in here today, bouncing from the region of the June low. So this is what investors are beginning to think about. When the Federal Reserve decides that they're not going to raise by 75 basis points every meeting, and in fact might only raise by 50 basis points or 25 basis points, or they're also looking, of course, to the point where they'll stop raising altogether, then they're anticipating that the market will bounce back exactly like Australia has done. So that's increasing speculation that we are very close to the peak of the interest rate cycle. And this is the big question. So, what is it that's going to stop the Federal Reserve from raising rates? Now, one thing that I think is particularly important to highlight is that Australia, Canada, and the UK are constrained to a certain extent in raising interest rates because many of the residential mortgages in the countries are floating rate, whereas the vast majority of mortgages in the USA are fixed rate. So raising interest rates in Australia has an immediate impact on consumers, whereas it's not quite the same pass-through mechanism in the USA because of so many people have fixed rate mortgages. Now, of course, it does hit demand and it hits access to mortgages when interest rates go up, but it doesn't put people who are not in the market for a new house in any kind of discomfort. So that, I think, is a differentiation point between what's happening in places like Australia and what's happening in the USA. Then we can think about the UK. So the Bank of England is in a very difficult position. They've got the go-ahead today from the Treasury that their purchase of bonds up to 100 billion has now been permissioned, and that in fact is more than they put to work last week. The pound is rapidly unwinding the short-term oversold condition, so it pulled back by about 31% between 2014 and 16, and it's pulled back by 27% and change between the middle of 2021 and now. So it's a reasonably similar sized contraction, and we're seeing an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition because the government is rolling back some of the most egregious of the irresponsible tax cutting that they were planning. So there's the potential here that the pound can rally further, but the first big area of potential resistance is going to be around 120. It's the lower side of the overhead trading range, and by the time it gets there, it will also be the region of the 200-day moving average. So, a lot of the rebound has already occurred. When we look at the FTSE 250, which is much more representative of the domestic economy, the index is also rebounding here. So, very oversold in the short term, beginning to push back up towards the lower side of the overhead trading range, and that will be the first area of potential resistance. Now, when I think about stocks, I think I'm going to just break them down into three different kinds. So, let's look, for example, at Coca-Cola. And the share initially rallied in here today and then finished in negative territory. And because the yield is 3%, and 10-year yields are more than that, well, yield-hungry investors will migrate towards bonds rather than Coca-Cola. Now, that is short-termish in nature because stocks can raise their dividends, so you get an increasing return over time, whereas you don't get an increasing return from fixed interest bonds. But with economic uncertainty, investors want to get that yield premium before they'll take on equity risk. So I think that's one of the factors that's weighing on some of these big consumer companies. And these are very consumer staple-y kind of shares. They haven't broken down to nearly the same extent as the wider market has, but their yields aren't high enough to really stoke, excuse me, a great deal of interest just yet. Now let's think about some of the technology companies. So Illumina has brought out their new genetic sequencing machine. It's going to bring down the cost of sequencing from $600 to $200. It's a highly cyclical company. So every time they bring out a new machine, then the share tends to advance. And we've seen that on multiple occasions over the course of the last 10 years. And we can just zoom out and we'll see then on a log scale that there are these big ranges, one above the last. So with the new machine, sales should improve. That's the kind of thing that people are probably willing to give some credence to, that it could be the kind of company that will come out of this bear market in a pretty good position. There was news over the last few days that the largest industrial battery in the world has just opened in Dalian in China, and ESS Tech is producing very similar flow batteries. So the share is also starting to steady. Now, this popped on the upside following the IPO via SPAC and has been building a base formation for most of this year. So it's up in excess of 10% in here today. So that's an impressive advance. And it also suggests that it's the kind of thing that people are thinking, well, regardless of what happens, there's going to be investment in energy storage infrastructure because energy independence is going to be a theme that's championed by every political party in the world as we come out of this impending recession and war with Russia. So we're certainly getting more interest in those types of companies. And then some of the fintech companies are also rallying from rather depressed levels. So Block, or what used to be called Square, is bouncing from the $50 area and appears to be at least attempting to put in a base formation. So we're seeing with some of these smaller techie companies some evidence of demand coming back to the fore. But then let's think about some of the bigger techie companies. And Tesla wasn't able to hold its rebound in here today. And Elon Musk appears to be now willing, apparently, to go through with his takeover of Twitter. Apple rebounded in here today, but from an oversold condition. And I'm still very leery of its sales potential because it is such a cyclical share, but at the wrong end of the cycle. And then we can look at gold. So we have stocks that people are buying, are really they're not buying the Dividend Aristocrats right now because the yields on offer are not competitive. They're starting to look at what the potential tech type companies would be that will prosper in a post-recession environment. But then gold has rebounded probably more impressively than any of these other sectors. This is a clear upward dynamic in here today, or this week, following through on the pop on the upside from last week. So we're now back above the 1,000-day moving average, back up inside the overhead trading range. We probably need a little bit of extra follow-through to really confirm that this is a failed downside break. But certainly, this is encouraging and it's attempting to break the sequence of lower rally highs. So, then gold's ability to continue to rally is very much tied to whether the dollar does in fact hold support around the 110 area. So, I'm not quite yet willing to believe that the dollar's rally is in fact over. The interest rate environment is still tightening overall. Now, we've also seen that monetary policy has been tightening up. And I think this is also particularly important that it's not just that we're in a global tightening of interest rates, but that we're also seeing that the money supply is contracting. And I think, in very simple terms, it's easy to make money, or at least easier to make money in the markets when there's a lot of money around. So we've got money being taken out at 750 billion a month. The global M2 is contracting on a year-over-year basis. That's also weighing on the S&P 500. If there's less money around, it's more difficult to make some. It makes it more competitive to access cheap liquidity. So we're not yet out of the woods. We still need to see clear evidence of liquidity being provided. And I'm very hesitant to think that the playbook, which has worked for the last 14 years, is going to continue to function because everybody's using it now. It's fully priced in. Everyone's assuming that the Fed will blink, that they will not be able to get in control of inflation. But one thing that we can think about is that if money supply growth is negative, and historically there's a 9-month lead between money supply growth going negative and deflationary forces becoming evident, then we can anticipate that deflation is going to become a much more pressing topic in January of next year. So we are certainly seeing a rebound, and there's certainly some evidence of base formation development within the most risky portion of the market. And investors are very keenly aware of the dollar and its role in suppressing gold. So if the dollar really does roll over and interest rates are close to peaking, well, then gold will take off, and it's likely to be among the best performing assets because it would also suggest that the inflationary pressures are going to remain more elevated for longer, that the question of how to pay the interest on sovereign debt, not just in the USA but elsewhere, is going to become more pressing and more of a topic of conversation. So then that's going to necessitate not just negative real interest rates, but deeply negative real interest rates. And that would then put pressure on the dollar. So there is a route to where gold can perform, but it is very much tied to whether the dollar is in fact peaking. And I think we're going to find that out in the not too distant future. In the meantime, the ARK Innovation ETF is back testing its lows from back in June. And we're seeing some evidence of steadier action in here too. Of course, it's exceptionally interest rate sensitive. So if the dollar is peaking, well, then the big question is what will happen with yields? When we look at what happened with the stock market in August, we perhaps have an answer. So in August, the S&P 500 popped on the upside right at the beginning of the month. And by the time we got to the end of the month, or excuse me, the middle of the month, it was starting to roll over. Now let's look at the 10-year yield. Right at the beginning of August, we had an upside Q reversal, and then it trended higher. So breaking out at right in the middle of the month to a new recovery high was the peak in the stock market. And then yields persisted higher all the way through until last week, and that put downward pressure on stocks. So the 3.5% level is absolutely integral to any argument that this rebound in stocks has legs. Yields will have to compress further, and that's going to be very much tied to the outlook for interest rate hikes from the Federal Reserve. What I found also especially interesting today was that the spread between the 10-year and the 3-month contracted really rather violently. So this is the outlier that has not yet become inverted. But with these kinds of dynamic moves, it could easily become inverted. Nothing has happened yet to question that we're not going to go into a recession, that it's much more likely that we're going to see deflationary fears rise in response to corporate profits contracting and less enthusiasm for speculative activity. And that would be one of the catalysts that would eventually change monetary policy to supportive. But we're just not there yet. And I don't think the Fed is going to be in the mood for fine tuning when they were so wrong last time around. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.